Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the NBA Podcast. We're going to finish our division previews today with a look at the Northwest Division. Before we get underway here, we have a few housekeeping notes. First, you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find the Twitter handles for all three of us as well, so be sure to give us a follow. Check us out today on today's Fast Break, at today's Fast Break on Twitter. That's where all of our podcasts are being hosted. You can also find us on iTunes. Please give us reviews. Let us know what you like, what you don't like. We are always open to feedback. And lastly, we are looking for intro music. So if you or anyone else knows people who can hook us up, we would gladly give you a shout out on our next pod. So with all of that said, I am joined today by Morten Jensen and Sarah Chalea, as always. How's it going, guys?
I'm sick, Brian.
I'm sorry to hear that, Mort. Sarah, are you feeling better than Morten is?
Yeah, I think I'm feeling better than Mort. Sorry.
That's good to hear.
On many different levels.
Yeah. I know, Sarah, I know you were at a Spurs preseason game last night, and that was a little hard to take, so we will...
Yeah.
We will try to steer any discussion away from Tim Duncan today. You can check out our Southwest Division preview if you want to hear Sarah mourn the loss of Timmy. So today we're going to focus on the Northwest. Let's start with the Denver Nuggets, who aren't really all that much different than where they were a year ago. They added a couple guys in the draft in Jamal Murray, Juan Hernan Gomez, and Malik Beasley. They lost DJ Augustine and Joffrey Laverne. I mean, I think the big story with Denver is in that they're in this kind of this flux, this kind of they don't know what they are. So they've got a bunch of young guys, and then they have these veterans. They have Gallinari, they have Kenneth Faried, they have Wilson Chandler. So what should they do this year, Mort? Should they go all in on this rebuild and trade these guys, or should they kind of see what happens and see if they can make a surprising playoff push?
Option one, sir. I would like to see Kenneth Reed go, at least. I don't see like a problem keep hanging on to Danilo or even Wilson, but the thing is with Wilson Chandler, though, he's gone down a lot. Mm-hmm. Like, he's frequently injured, and I suppose you could say the same about Danilo Gallinari. Gallinari, mm-hmm. however, when he plays, it just seems like he's more stable. So I would hang on to him personally. Faried is really a problem in my eyes. He's not a strong defensive player. Mm-hmm. He can't shoot. So it's like two major weaknesses. He's a strong rebounder, energy guy. That I can sort of appreciate if he was coming off the bench and was getting like 20, 22 minutes a night. Mm-hmm. But it just seems like he wants something more. And if a team out there is willing to take him, then why not? Side note, I think in regards to their rebuilding process, they're doing what Orlando should have been doing.
Yes.
Like, they're really rebuilding well. They are getting quality players. They're not looking at positions necessarily. I mean, just look at their shooting guard debt. Mm-hmm. They are just bringing a lot of talent together, trying to figure out who will stand on top of that, and like in the hierarchy. Mm-hmm. And then they'll probably make a consolidation trade at some point. I am really digging what they're doing. It's gone under the radar. Though I don't understand why they went after Dwayne Wade in free agency, though.
Yeah, that's... it seemed like it was one of those things, kind of like what the Bulls were trying to do. Just bring in a big name and hope that attracts stars down the line. That would be my guess.
But... Oh, they were going for Banana Boat.
Yeah, right, exactly. They were
Mile going... High Banana Boat, yeah.
Oh, that would be fun. Yeah, I mean, you've been high on the Nuggets for a while. And how they've been rebuilding. And I feel very similar. I mean, especially, you know, I think you said it well. They don't really care about positions. Like Jamal Murray and Malik Beasley are both two guards. They didn't care. They're just going to take the best player, see which one rises to the top. And then, I mean...
And Gary Harris, there's already there.
Right. Yeah, so. he's hurt to start the year. We have to keep that in mind. Right. So that actually benefits Murray. You figure he's going to have a bigger early season role. I think the other big storyline, we touched on Faried a little bit, but especially with the additions of Hernan Gomez, they've got a somewhat crowded front court. So Sarah, as our resident big man expert here, I want to talk to you here first about Nikola Jokic, who Basically, he's going to be basketball Twitter's, like, one of the favorite five big men this year. Do you think he's headed for... I mean, even last year, he broke out in an under-the-radar way. But do you think he's headed for a season now where even casual NBA fans are going to know and appreciate his game?
I think so, for the fact that, I mean, NBA Twitter has been kind of trying to push him for the last, I don't know, all offseason pretty much. Everybody's in love with him, and rightly so. So, yeah, I don't know that his numbers are going to jump that much, but they were pretty darn good last year. So I think, yeah, people will just start to recognize that, hopefully. Unfortunately, for those of us who don't have League Pass, the Nuggets aren't on a lot, so that kind of hurts him with the casual fans. But yeah, as soon as they see his game, he's fun. Come on. I mean, you guys know I love the big guys, but he's a heck of a player, and I love big guys that are playmakers, and he is one. Mm-hmm. So yeah, he's a fun watch, and he's going to have another good year. Same thing with Nurkic. I mean, you can never predict if a guy's going to stay healthy or not, but in the limited preseason action that I've seen, he's looked pretty good. The other day, he had a like dribble right towards the middle, back to the basket move, and then came back and put it up with the left hand off the glass. It was beautiful.
Yeah.
So that's a great 1-2 punch in the front court there.
Yeah, I think Nurkic, at least through his first three preseason games, was averaging somewhere around like 18 points and 13 rebounds a night. And I think it was within like under 30 minutes. So, I mean, it wasn't all that long ago. It was 2 years ago where he really stole the hearts of basketball Twitter, especially toward the end of the year. And then last year he was hurt for a good part of the year. Seemed like he fell into Mike Malone's doghouse a little bit. But this offseason, Malone has been praising Nurkic, said he's healthier than ever, had a great offseason, and he's showing it in the preseason. So I think, you know, the only thing aside from health that could hold him back is that he's behind Jokic. Like, there's a equally, if not better, player ahead of him. That said, it sounds like Malone is willing to try out a Nurkic-Jokic front court. So, at least for a couple minutes a night. He's... Right. Not opposed to putting those two guys together, even though the trend is to go small ball. And, you know, Jokic has shooting range, so it's not like you're playing two plotting bigs next to one another. It has a chance to work. And then that feeds into what you were saying, Mort, with putting Fareed on the bench as an energy guy. If you've got Nurkic and Jokic starting together, you can put Fareed more in his natural role as, like, a rich man's Thomas Robertson.
And Nurkic can hit like this 15, 17 footer as well.
Yeah, that's true.
So it provides a little bit additional spacing. But I get now why they traded Joffrey LeVern.
Yeah.
Like, I really like LeVern. And when I saw they only got 2 second rounders for him, I was like, oh, that's not like the best return. But I think the current situation forced their hand a bit. They knew that everyone's trade value would likely plummet a little bit if they all had to share minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Similar to what the Sixers are going through with Embiid, Noel, and Okafor. It's that question of diminishing returns, for sure. And I think, I mean, that LeVern trade also raised my eyebrow a little bit, just because I didn't think Nurkic was going to be such a beast. So I wonder if they saw the progress he was making throughout the offseason and were like, oh, you know what? LeVern, we're not going to need him because we've got Jokic, we have Nurkic, we have Hernan Gomez. We can play Danilo at the four. We could play Fareed at the four. We could play Wilson Chandler at the four. Like, LeVern just was not going to get minutes realistically, barring injuries. So I think the last big question with the Nuggets is, we're entering year two of the Emmanuel Mudiay experience. What are we expecting from him, or
Hopefully less turnovers.
Yeah.
I mean, he was really adding those up. But I read somewhere something very interesting, that NBA teams saw a high turnover count from young players as a good thing, because it meant that they were willing to take chances with the ball and they were growing comfortable with the ball in their hands. Like, I'm not sure I'm getting the context right. It's yeah. A while since I read it, but it was interesting. The shooting percentages remains a concern. Mm-hmm. I mean, he shot 36% on the year. That's horrific.
Right.
And I would love to see like how they could free him up a little bit. I think he's at his best when he's just going to the basket. Mm-hmm. And not settling for Jace. And he did that a little bit, but it could be the intimidation factor. I mean, come on. 19-year-old rookie. Of course, yeah. He's going to pull up at times instead of just taking hard to the basket. Everyone does it. So I'm looking forward to seeing if he can adapt and become more of a... this is a high praise, but in a Tony Parker-esque kind of attacking the mid-range area and getting up floaters and whatnot, I just want him to see finish around the 12-foot area a little bit more.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, he was hurt for a decent part of last year, so in some way that might have impeded his development. I think that point you make about the high turnover rate is interesting, because I guess I could see like teams are excited to see their players are aggressive, and if you're in a rebuilding situation anyway, it's not like you're not sweating every win and loss, so you want your players to grow through mistakes now, so then when your record actually matters in a year or two, they've learned already, they're ready for that next step. Yeah. I do kind of think maybe, like, I'm really high on Gary Harris. He had a great sophomore year after barely being used as a rookie. That said, I'm wondering if this early season injury, I think he's supposed to be out for the first month or so of the season, might be a blessing in disguise, because Jamal Murray, you know, the concern about him coming out of the draft was like what position he can play. No one was really sold on him as a full-time point guard, but he can handle the ball a little bit. So I'm wondering if pairing him with Moutier will actually be a really good fit.
Yeah.
And then, like, I don't know. I would assume Gary Harris still is going to supplant him as the starter when he comes back. But, you know, maybe you roll a little bit more with a Moutier-Murray combo and then do Gary Harris-Will Barton, more of that off the bench. So I'm interested to see Moutier. I was high on him last year. You know, as a Sixers fan, I've had to be very attuned to the top of the draft board every year for the last couple of years. So I wanted Moutier if we had fallen a little bit further. So I'm hoping for big things in year two of Moutier. And speaking of big things, let's move to Morton's new team, the Minnesota Timberwolves. The biggest addition, let's be honest, is Tom Thibodeau as their head coach and president of basketball operations. They also drafted Chris Dunn after Danny Ainge refused to trade anything for Chris Dunn. They got Cole Aldrich and Jordan Hill, and then their only big loss was Kevin Garnett and then interim coach Sam Mitchell. So, Morton, you're our Bulls guy. You're familiar with Thibodeau. What do you see happening here with Tibbs? How is he going to mold this young roster in his image? And what does it mean specifically for Andrew Wiggins? Can he make him into a Jimmy Butler-type player? And, you know, the big guy, Karl-Anthony Towns.
Well, I think Jimmy Butler is actually a high praise. Jimmy is like an established all-star, one of the best two-way players in the game. He's also a strong rebounder, and I don't think that you can turn Andrew Wiggins into Jimmy Butler. I think you can turn Andrew Wiggins into something else, like sort of a mix between Giannis Antetokounmpo and Kawhi Leonard-ish. Like, not that, for example, like Kawhi can shoot the ball, Giannis can't. So if you take like the average of between the two, that's probably going to be Wiggins. Mm. But he can get to the rim. He's probably going to be best when he's inside of 17 feet. That's probably going to be a theme throughout the course of his career. What I want to see is him becoming a little bit of Luol Deng in terms of defense. I wanted to see him come out and actually guard fours as well as twos and threes, because that gives you like the ultimate flexibility defensively. If you can guard a wing player as well as switch onto a big guy underneath the basket, then you've got something special, and then you have a reason to stay into the ball game for 35-38 minutes a night.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that last year Wiggins just got a lot of these development minutes, when if you look at it from an honest point of view, he shouldn't have played that many minutes,
right?
Because he was really struggling at times. Tips is the perfect coach to bring in, though, like to mold him into that type of player. The same goes for Karl-Anthony Towns. And also, I noted in your outline, Brian, you asked the question, has Tips learned from overplaying his young guns in Chicago? In Chicago, are Towns, Wiggins, Zach LaVine, and Gorgui Dieng headed for 38 minutes a game?
Yep.
Like, I know he had some issues, but I think the media narrative of Tips outplaying overplaying his guys have been dramatically overrated. I think it's... He had some issues, especially with Dang at times, and sometimes with Butler, but in the grand scheme of things, I don't think it was that... I mean, it wasn't that big of a problem. Like, I watched every Bulls game, like, half the time, those minutes were necessary to climb out a win. Like,
right.
Because Bulls management did not bring in help to Derek offensively, so he had to rely on Dang. He had to rely on Noah even to score at times, and we know that's not his biggest strength. So I'm thinking with the weapons available in Minnesota, I think it's a complete non-issue heading into the year. Like, look at the offensive firepower they have. Towns, LaVine, Wiggins in a sense, Shabazz Muhammad coming off the bench, Chris Dunn who can attack the rim. Hell, even Gorgui Dieng can score.
Mm-hmm.
And even like he's actually developing a sneaky three-point shot, it seems like. So, I mean, there are so many more weapons at his disposal now. So I think it's going to come very natural to Tibbs to like mold these guys into whatever he feels like. And that's also why I have them going to the playoffs. I just can't imagine a team with this like firepower, this arsenal, coached by Tibbs, not making the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you bring up a good point. You know, a lot of the Tibbs overplaying guys, I think like Dieng and Butler particularly either led the league in minutes or were like top three. So it's not like he did it with everyone. He wasn't playing Derek 38 minutes a night necessarily, but he did have a tendency to lean on these two-way wing players. So Wiggins might be the one who needs to stress the most about this overplaying. That said, you know, he took this year-long sabbatical. And I forget where I read it. Actually, it might have been a Bleacher Report piece by Jonathan Abrams. I'm not totally sure. But Tibbs basically said, like, you know, I was very intentional about what I did during my year off. Like, I went to all of these different teams and all of these different programs in different stages of building. So he went to... I think he visited the Warriors and he visited the Spurs, but then he also visited some teams that were further away from immediate contention to kind of get a better sense of, like, how do I advance my program? Here is what the standard that I'm looking to achieve. How do I get from point X to point Y? So I think that should help him. And, you know, maybe how things all went down in Chicago at the end taught him some lessons about resting players more, about coexisting with your front office more. He doesn't have as much of a concern about that in Minnesota because he's also the president of basketball operations. But, you know, I think you make a good point in that we can't just assume Chicago Tibbs is moving to Minnesota. Like, we have to assume that he learned something and he's going to evolve, and we just need to see how that translates once the season starts. And, Sarah, we're going back to you, big man expert here. Is Karl-Anthony Towns going to be an All-Star this year?
Yes!
Yeah.
let's see. How do they do it now? It's just front court guys, right? It's not positional as much.
Yeah, I think the center, right? Like, the center is off the ballot,
right?
I believe.
Okay, so you no longer have Kobe Bryant leeching up a forward spot,
right? I believe he takes. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I don't see any reason why. I mean, his numbers were always good enough. Of course, if they don't win a ton of games, but we think they should be improved there this year too. Because voters always look at that, but I don't see how he can get left off this year. I really don't. He's definitely an all-star. The bigger question for me, and we could talk about this when we get to the Blazers, is Damian, because everyone keeps talking about Damian Lillard always being overlooked. I don't think he is underrated anymore, but it's just really hard to make the all-star team at that spot in the West. But we'll talk about that later. But yeah, I think there's room for Karl Anthony Towns on the all-star team for sure.
Knock
Yeah,
on
something
wood.
would have to like go horrifically wrong, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he averaged what, like 18, 10, and 2 last year as a
Oh, he
rookie.
should have been an all-star.
Yeah, well, I mean, Anthony Davis averaged 24, 10, and 2, and he also missed the All-Star team. So,
Yeah, but still,
we can't go just by per game stats, especially, I mean, Sarah brought it up. Voters do factor winning into the equation. Look no further than a couple years ago when like four Atlanta Hawks made the All-Star team.
All
So,
right.
I mean, that does play in. So if the Timberwolves do struggle early, I mean, God forbid it could happen that both Towns and Anthony Davis both miss the All-Star game. That said, I hope both are in because that would be super fun to watch. And frankly, I mean, it might even come down to, it's the fans vote in the starting five.
That's true.
So, Tim Duncan's gone now. Kevin Durant, aside from the Bay Area, is going to be pretty reviled this year. So there, like Blake Griffin, you got to figure he's going to get one spot. Maybe KD gets another spot. But like, there is a spot open in theory for a fan vote if like things go wrong in Sacramento and Boogie doesn't get that. So, let's just all hope that Todd stays healthy is going to be an all-star because the kid's a total monster. He's going to be like, I mean, he's just a future MVP candidate waiting to happen. I'm going to go back to you for this one, Mort, because I know you were really high on this guy coming into the draft and you wanted him on the Bulls. Chris Dunn, is he going to knock Ricky Rubio out of the starting lineup at some point? Is he going to basically force the Timberwolves to trade Ricky Rubio at some point?
Well, actually, just to correct you a little bit, I was actually higher on a lot of other players. It was more the annoyance from my end was the fact that Boston didn't pick Chris Dunn because I knew Chicago wanted him regardless. I had no problem with that because I like Chris Dunn like overall, but it was in regards to the whole Jimmy Butler trade because that was the one I was pursuing. I wanted them to blow everything up, so that was why Dunn kept coming up. But yeah, I mean, that doesn't mean I don't like the kid. I definitely like him. I think that he is going to make Ricky Rubio obsolete. I can't imagine like 2 years from now, Rubio starting over Dunn. I just can't. It seems like Dunn is the most NBA ready point guard in the draft. Also, like leaps and bounds the best. He's defensively active. He was projected as a better long range shooter. And he's more athletic. It just seems like he's gonna carve his own edge within Tibbs' schemes, and that leaves Ricky Rubio on the outside because he's not gonna accept a bench spot. I can't imagine that gonna happen.
Yeah, I mean, Dunn has struggled a little bit with his shooting efficiency during the preseason. That said, it's the preseason. We can't take too many grand conclusions from 3 or 4 or 5 games. So it would not be a total surprise to see Dunn, as the year progresses, get more comfortable in the scheme and start pushing Rubio harder for minutes. At which point, I mean, I think you're totally right. Rubio is going to bristle if he's pushed into a smaller role or even gets moved to the bench. So, if a team finds itself in need of a point guard, hello, 76ers, it would not be a total surprise if Rubio gets moved. All right, let's move on to the Oklahoma City Thunder, who, in case you didn't know, are down two of their best three players from last year. They obviously lost Kevin Durant to the Golden State Warriors. They traded Serge Ibaka to the Orlando Magic. Deion Waiters also left. So I guess they're technically down three of their best four players, right? Because Deion is now gone. Dion is now with the Miami Heat. They did bring in Fort Ibaka. They got Victor Oladipo and how do you say it? Domantas Sabonis?
Yeah, that's Domantas? I think it's like that. Or I've actually called him Domantas.
Okay.
Sabonis, but it's, yeah, I'm not sure, honestly.
The Sabonis kid. They got LaVerne, who we mentioned in Denver, and then Alex Abrines. So, I mean, the big question here is this still a playoff team without KD? And Sarah, as our resident Western Conference expert, as someone who is very familiar with the Thunder, especially over the past couple of years, do you think they're going to make the playoffs still?
Boy. They're going to be one of several teams fighting for kind of those last few spots. Mm-hmm. For me, they're really similar to the Blazers. I mean, they're slightly better, mm-hmm. but you're going to have Russ and Depot, kind of like Dame and CJ. And then, I mean, Ilyasova is a guy that I've liked for a long time. But, I mean, you're banking on him, Collison, Mitch McGarry, and Sabonis, if they're all going to stick around. And then, obviously, we know what you're getting out of Adams and Cantor and even LaVerne. I mean, it's a good lineup. But there is, obviously, you're going to have a big black hole at small forward when you lose one of the best players in the league.
Right.
I've heard that Singler is shooting well in the preseason. So, okay. You know, perhaps if he could keep that up. But, man, it's going to be a fight. I don't know if I can commit to saying they're not going to make the playoffs, but I wouldn't expect to see them higher than six. That might be optimistic. Just say they could reach that. Mm. So,
I think that's fair. The days of them challenging the Warriors and the Spurs and the Clippers for a top three seed in the West likely went out that door when Kevin Durant did. But they do now have a very angry Russell Westbrook who keeps getting asked about every comment that Kevin Durant makes, especially recently someone asked, or KD said, like, I'm playing with a bunch of unselfish guys. And a reporter asked Westbrook about that. He's like, dude, just shut up. Like, I'm not going to respond to everything you say about KD or everything that he says. Like, I'm here. I'm just not going to talk about it anymore. So, with an angry Westbrook, Mort, do you think he's a legit threat to average a triple-double this year?
I'm so glad you asked me that because I'm actually working on an article for today's Fast Break in regards to Westbrook and his MVP chances.
Ooh, okay.
Here's the thing. In order to get 10 rebounds a game, then you kind of need to be like the primary glass attacker on your team. I know he averaged 7.8 last year, which was out of this world.
Yeah.
But now he's got Sabonis. Mm-hmm. Ennis Kanter is going to play a big role. Steven Adams is going to play a big role. Like, where's the 10 rebounds going to come from?
Mm-hmm.
It's for a point guard. Like, mm-hmm. don't get me wrong, he's probably still going to average like 6, maybe even 7. But 10, it's just like, it's an otherworldly number. And with so much competition in the front court, it's going to be very close to impossible. Now let's move on to the assist, right?
Yep.
Can you imagine losing Kevin Durant while having to take on a larger scoring responsibility and then maintain his 10.4 assist rate? Because I can't.
That's a good
it
point.
Seems like he's going to score more. And the fact that he doesn't have one of the best off-ball scorers in the history of the damn league around him.
Yeah.
That I could imagine being a huge hurdle in him reaching 10 assists. My guess, rough estimate, obviously, Russ has a very historic, but in the end, non-important 35-point, 7 rebounds, 8 assists year.
Ooh, okay. Interesting. You make some really good points about both the rebounds and the assists. And I've been writing fantasy content for today's Fast Break, trying to get the season preview stuff out. And it seems like on a lot of people's big boards for fantasy, Russ is the number one ranked player. And I actually have James Harden first. So you actually just convinced me even more that I am right to have Harden above Westbrook because I I mean, the theory is that Westbrook is just going to have to pick up even more of a load, but you know, you're totally right about he's got three really good rebounders to compete with. And I guess the same was true last year with Ibaka. You could just replace Sabonis with Ibaka. But you do have to wonder if Cantor plays a little bit more than he did last year because they need more scoring punch to replace KD and Ibaka. So
I'll even help you along with another argument.
Okay.
Victor Oladipo was projected as a point guard once. And if Russ is going to be the end target of the guy who has to take a shot, much like Allen Iverson back with the Sixers, then you need to have another guy setting him up a lot of times. True. That's going to be Victor Oladipo, meaning Russ is going to take the shot instead of getting the dime.
Right. Good point.
Like, I legitimately could see him average 35.
Yeah.
I don't know if he does that. He's probably going to be somewhere between 32 and 35. So that's too ridiculous, though.
Yeah. Oh, of course. So, yeah, anyone who's submitting their season predictions, it's probably safe to pencil Russell Westbrook in as the league's scoring leader.
Yeah.
Sarah, again, we're going back to you, resident big man expert. We've got Steven Adams. We have Enes Kanter. The boat, they're awesomely nicknamed the Stash Brothers. Can they help replace especially the offensive output of KD and Ibaka? How much do you think they will do in that regard?
That's going to be tough. I think, man, Kanter is obviously a very skilled offensive player. So, I mean, I think he's going to pick up some of that. Adams is getting there, but still kind of needs a little more help. I mean, he's not a terrific back to the basket guy, but he's got such power that he can get there. You know, if he gets a touch that's near the basket, he can power his way in. Mm-hmm. I don't know about replacing KD's scoring output, but they're going to come close. They close the gap a little bit.
I think that's a fair assessment. Obviously, you're not going to replace the league's second best scorer, top scorer even. No one can do that. It's going to have to be a collective effort. Mort's already talked about Russ taking on more. I mean, Oladipo, I think, is also going to be, you know, he's got the potential to score 20 a game. So he's going to be a very valuable asset for them this year. So let's go to Oladipo, Mort. There's been talk that he wants a max contract extension, and he's not going to settle for less. It doesn't seem like the Thunder are going to give him that prior to the extension deadline, because as we've seen, you know, multiple times in years past, it makes more sense to wait. Like the Spurs did it with Kawhi, you keep the lower cap hold, sign into an extension next year. So it's not necessarily an indictment of Oladipo, it's just, you know, you're playing the financial reality of the NBA. That said, do you think this year he's going to prove that he is worth that max extension next summer?
Well, that's a good question. Like, obviously, the Thunder will be hoping that he proves that. I don't know. That's actually a very, very good question because he was so up and down in Orlando. Really, I mean, this was the type of guy who could have 40-point games the one night and then have two games in a row where he scored less than 10. His defensive output, I felt personally, was somewhat reliable and somewhat consistent. But he did have moments where he stepped up and really looked like one of those all defensive team type of guys. And I thought he would buy into that and do it more routinely. And then he sort of like checked a little bit out again and just remained good, but not excellent. I guess coming into year four, new team, new start, new responsibility. You know, I'm going to be optimistic and say yes, but just rest assured, this is my gut talking. This is not my analytical mind talking because I have no way of knowing. But I do feel like a change of scenery might do him good.
Yeah.
I also think that he learned a lot from Scott Skiles defensively that he could bring to OKC. I mean, never sleep on the Skiles, man. Like, he is so good. And the fact that Oladipo is also a strong rebounder, I think he could unlock that all-around game a little bit. Whether he's going to average, like you said, 20, I mean, it's possible. Mm-hmm. But it depends on Russ, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, I think they've talked about Russ and Oladipo being, like, the best defensive backcourt in the league, which I think just in terms of, like, ball pressure and steals, they very well could be. I mean, they're both, like, two ferocious bulldogs, and it's going to be hell on opposing ball handlers, especially older guys, to bring the ball up against them every single time. That said, neither one is a consistent three-point shooter. So I think that is going to be the big question this year. Can they command respect from beyond the three-point arc, or are teams just going to sag off of them and pack the paint against their complement of bigs? So I think I'm with you, Mort, that he's going to prove worthy of a max extension and that someone will give him a max deal next summer in restricted free agency.
Yeah.
The question is it OKC and do they match? Because if he doesn't prove to be a perfect fit with Russ, then maybe they have to weigh, you know, maybe they do match and then decide to trade him later just so they don't lose, you know, they don't lose Ibaka for nothing, basically.
But they could, right? They really could.
Yeah.
Like, just pull a Harden 2.0.
Right. Exactly. I mean,
let's save money.
Yeah. Oh, God. That would be awful. No, I think either way, I would be shocked if they don't retain him. But I think there is question about the long-term viability of them on offense, especially without an elite scorer, elite shooter like Kevin Durant. But hey, as Sarah mentioned, Kyle Singler was lighting it up in preseason. So maybe, maybe they've got their answer right there.
No pressure, Kyle.
Unfortunately, yeah. He's like the only one to carry the whole three-point load.
Right, exactly.
You made a good point, Brian, about people packing the paint against them. That's a serious danger and probably is going to happen. But as we talked about last year in the playoffs, like, if you're not going to hit a lot of threes, you either have to be an elite defensive team or you have to rebound like crazy. And that's something I didn't think about when you asked me about Cantor and Adams making up for the scoring. I'm overthinking about them two scoring. But, you know, even if it's not them scoring all those points, they're going to score and they're going to rebound and give the Thunder a lot of extra opportunities. So that's going to help make up for the lack of scoring as well, because they're going to get second chances. So,
yeah, that's a really good point. They are definitely, I mean, they could be an elite defensive team if they have Russ, Depot, if they start Andre Robertson, and then it sounds like Sabonis is probably going to be the starting four and Steven Adams at the five. So that is a hellacious starting five in terms of defense. Like, that really could, if they don't lead the league, they could easily be top five. So I'm also with you. We talked about them being a playoff team earlier. I personally have them in, I think, as the seventh seed. But I think you're totally right. They're just going to be in that, like, 6-10 range, and we just can't be sure. It's basically, honestly, going to come down to injuries. So let us move on to the Portland Trail Blazers. Sarah, we talked about him earlier. So let's start with Damian Lillard. He goes by this, I get snubbed for the All-Star team, I get snubbed for the Olympic team, I'm so underrated, blah, blah, blah. We both, you pushed back on that narrative. I'm right with you. Do you think he's actually like a dark horse MVP candidate this year?
I had not considered that. I mean, yeah, he could be in the conversation. I don't think, same thing with All-Star games, you know, that they always factor in wins when coming up with an MVP. So I don't think they're going to win enough games for him to be a true candidate, even though we can argue whether that's really fair that they do that for MVP or not. But overall, yeah, I think that's what's going to happen. But yeah, he could be like a fringe top five guy in that. He's going to have a good year. And like you said, he's not underrated anymore. Everyone knows what he's capable of. he somehow got them to make the playoffs last year, and we still can't figure out how that happened. So, I mean, yeah, he's a hell of a player, but it's just there's so many good guards in the league, especially in the West, that it's really tough to make those limited teams.
Right, yeah. I mean, you've got, you're already competing with Russ, you're competing with Stephen Curry, Klay Thompson, Chris Paul. So right there, that's four that, I mean, good luck beat, and James Harden, like,
yeah,
that's a brutal set of competitors to have to beat out to make an all-star team. So even if he does not make an all-star team, he is an all-star caliber player. I think that is now without question. Yeah. Speaking of all-star caliber players, the Blazers, their big addition this summer was Evan Turner, which we all bristled with once we learned how much money they spent on Evan Turner. They also brought in Festus Ezeli, drafted Jake Lehman, got Shabazz Napier. So, Mort, I mean, I'm going to ask you this, and you know my answer already, but what is the best role for Evan Turner on this team?
Like, not on the team and his salary cleared, I guess. No, probably the three. or like an off the bench super sub who can play 1-3, mm-hmm. maybe. I don't know, because he can't shoot.
Right.
And that's a huge problem. Like, I think it would be best using him as a playmaker. He's got a lot of moves, I'll give him that. And he can facilitate, and he can somehow, like, he's one of those guys, like, if you give him the ball, he'll somehow create a shot for himself. Mm-hmm. Like, even if he has to pull out, like, 1,000 moves, he'll somehow get that ball up, and it'll be a decent shot. I just hate the fact that he can't stretch the court.
Yeah.
But in a, like, a pseudo-playmaking role, you know, giving the ball up to Dame and CJ, that would probably be the best bet. Also, defensively, I kind of like his versatility.
Mm-hmm.
But $70 million, man.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, I mean, I think we captured our reaction in our free agency podcast. So go back and listen to that if you want to hear us melt down when we found out the terms of Evan Turner's contract. They've talked up his playmaking as a reason they brought him in. They wanted someone else to create aside from Dame and CJ. That said, I think I'm with you, Mort. Like, I think he's best suited off the bench in this playmaking role. He can still play 30 minutes a night, but that's he thrived in that role in Boston, so I don't know why you're going to change that in Portland. Especially, you know, at the end of the year, Portland found this great starting five with Dame, CJ, Mo Harkless, Al-Farouq Aminu. Stick with that. Like, why are you going to change that? That, I mean, that's, you're not going to have, if you have Turner in your starting lineup, you still have the concern off the bench about having secondary playmakers. So keep your starting five as is. Keep Turner in a bench role. You can have him at the end of games, and you can go small ball. Like, it gives you a lot more versatility, in my opinion. So we'll see what happens with ET. I mean, as a Sixers fan, I wish him nothing but the best. I'm happy that he found success in Boston, and I do hope that he finds similar success in Portland, although, you know, I'm naturally a bit skeptical about it.
Just a question, Brian, because he's been in Philly, so you might be able to answer me this question. Okay. I actually looked at his basketball reference page today, and I found that one of his nicknames, the Villain.
Yes.
I have never heard that. Like, what? When did that come about?
That's from his Ohio State days. Mark Titus, who was their bench warmer, like a walk-on who never left the bench, started referring to him as the Villain, and it has stuck with him ever since. So,
Just went into the encyclopedia of nicknames here. Yeah. Well, way to go, Brian.
you could thank Club Trillion for that. So, Sarah, you mentioned this earlier, how Dame led the Blazers to the playoffs last year, and we can't really figure out how it happened. Do you think they build on that surprising success from last year, or do you think they regress a little bit this year?
I would expect the latter. I'm not too high on them this year. I mean, I like Aminu, and I think, you know, if he is a consistent shooter, they have a good chance to somewhat middle around where they were. But yeah, oh yeah, Myers Leonard is apparently shooting threes now, so that's fun. Yes. I don't know. But yeah, Alan Crabb too, that's great. But the Evan Turner deal, like, could we say that's worse than the Mozgov deal that we've all laughed at quite a bit? It's pretty bad.
Like, equally bad.
Okay. We'll say equally bad. I like, y'all know I'm not a numbers guru by any sense, financial or otherwise, but it really hit home when I was looking at the ESPN roster, because they list the salary for the year. Oh, and no. He's making more money than everybody except Alan Crabb and Damian Lillard. Like, how does that happen?
Well, yeah, CJ did sign that extension, so that will kick in, yes, I guess.
There you go.
Next year, maybe. But yeah. He is making an absurd amount of money.
Yeah, so they still don't have enough filled in around Damian, and so CJ is really what it comes down to. And I think that, you know, yeah, so the Thunder fell down a little bit because they lost KD, but other teams took step forward. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think that the Blazers are still going to have the spot that they had last year. Definitely not.
Yeah, I'm with you. I feel like I'm taking crazy pills because it seems like a lot of people are still high on the Blazers. And, yeah, I mean, I think they're going to be right in that mix with the Thunder as a team scrapping for one of the final three playoff spots, because we're about to talk about the Utah Jazz, but they made some big moves. Memphis Grizzlies made some big moves. You know, OKC can still be frisky. Dallas could still be frisky. Like, there's a lot in that mix, and Minnesota is going to be up there too. So it would not totally shock me if the Blazers missed the playoffs entirely, but it also wouldn't shock me if they made like the sixth or seventh seed.
So yeah, I have them as a lock.
A lock to make the playoffs or to miss?
Yeah, and the reason is Alan Crabb.
Oh,
I think they invested so much money in him because he's gonna get like a much greater role.
Mm-hmm.
I fully expect him to become their third leading scorer now. He's also got this fluid scoring game, right? He was used as a bit player last year, or not? No, well, that's not being fair. He was more than a bit player, but he wasn't used to the full extent that he could have been.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're gonna see him get a lot more touches this year, a lot more minutes, a lot more late game situations. And it wouldn't even surprise me to see him end up averaging like 15, 17 points a game.
Hmm.
Like, I think they're expecting him now to become like, you know, the third part of the Dame and CJ show.
Yeah. Yeah, that wouldn't...
It's going to be a trio. I think that's what they're going for with Crabb. It's going to be a trio.
That would not surprise me. We have to remember, it was Brooklyn that handed Crabb, I think it was 5 years, $75 million offer sheet, and Portland did...
Four-year.
Oh, God. Oh, wow. Oh, yeah, it was a four-year. Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah, so, because they can't, you know, teams right, outside can't right, offer right. more than can't four.
Do, yeah, so... I mean, that's a lot of money for a guy who has no chance of becoming a starter because he's back behind CJ and Dame. So, yeah, I mean, they must have big plans for Crabb. So I was going to ask you, Mort, but I don't know. Well, let's just play the devil's advocate for a second. Say things go south. they underachieve. They look like they're going to miss a playoff spot. You know, they are very much now capped out because of how much they spent on Crabb and Turner and CJ. So do you think if their season falls apart a little bit, do they start to try to move one of those guys, Turner, Crabb maybe? Or do you think they give it another go next year?
I mean, Turner, yeah, obviously. But like, good luck finding a suitor. Crap, no. I think even if shit hits the fan, I think they're going to stick with Dame, CJ, and Crab, mm-hmm. like, going forward. I think they have intentionally invested all these money because they know they're not going to be a free agent player in the foreseeable future. So they're going to say, you know what, then we'll find a way to upgrade the front court. We might trade Myers Leonard. We might trade some of the big men, maybe for draft picks to see if we can find a gem in the draft. But we're sticking with our core guys of CJ and Dame, and who I consider a core guy as well, Alan Crabb. I think that's like the point. And Evan Turner, yeah, I think he's the one that they would want to trade. But oh, wait a second. I'm sorry. Sacramento exists.
Right.
Sorry.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah, they're going to need someone to fill Rudy Gay's spot eventually, right?
Yeah. Or hell, you know, the Knicks.
Oh, yeah. Oh, for like, sure. Yeah.
Could you just imagine, for example, the Knicks, when things go shoddy and Derek needs to be moved?
Yeah.
Like, you could trade Evan Turner for Derek Rose and then get his money off the cap.
Right. Oh, God. And hey, Brian Colangelo is still around to drive up interest in everyone. I don't know if you guys saw, but he's apparently the reason the detente broke between Cleveland and J.R. Smith. Reportedly, he expressed some interest in J.R., so he's there to drive up interest in anyone. All right, let's move to our final team in the division, the Utah Jazz. I feel like they are the trendy breakout pick in the Western Conference. They made some huge additions: George Hill, Joe Johnson, Boris Diaw. Didn't really lose anyone of major importance. A couple bench guys in Trey Burke and Trevor Booker and Tibor Pleiss. So, I mean, let's just jump right into it. Sarah, is the hype justified for this team?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think we have to pump the brakes a little bit just because obviously they're entering this season with Hayward sidelined and they have a pretty stiff schedule. But I still think that could end up being somewhat of a blessing in disguise as long as he comes back healthy, because they're going to figure it out without him for a little while, and they still have a really nice roster around him. So, I mean, Joe Johnson and Joe Ingles can step in there. Trey Lyles looks really interesting.
Yes.
Yeah, so Gobert, you guys know how I feel about Bobo and George Hill. So, yeah, I definitely think the hype is justified. It's hard to confirm that, hey, they're definitely, because that end of the season last year was so disappointing.
Yeah.
But they've added veteran guys like George Hill and Boris Diaw to kind of try to offset whatever happened there with, you know, whether it was overachieving or being so close to the playoffs and they just kind of sputtered out. But yeah, I definitely think they're going to make the playoffs this year. I don't know how high. What do you guys think about that?
Yeah.
Because I've seen people, I think you said four. Did you say four?
I have them fifth. Okay. Tentatively. The subject to change. I mean, I think I had them fourth until Hayward's injury. And then I push them down below Memphis. Because, I think you nailed it. They've got veterans now. And they've also, they also get Dante Exum coming back. And they have Alec Burks coming back. So they have quite possibly the deepest roster in the NBA when it comes to, legitimate rotation players. Like, NBA quality rotation players. So they can withstand injuries. I mean, they've already got this Hayward thing. He dislocated his finger, or dislocated and broke it, which sounds awful.
Ouch.
And I think he's out for 4 to 6 weeks, so probably peg his return somewhere in the end of November. You figure he misses the first 12 to 15 games at worst. But they, as you said, they've got some guys who can step in. Joe Johnson, I think Rodney Hood could even play a little bit of the three. So, you know, that could, I don't know that they're excited to lose what is probably their best player, but, you know, they've got the depth to withstand it, and I think it speaks well of their offseason to have assembled that type of a roster. I think another one of the big questions, and Sarah, I'm going to go right back to you here, because you just brought up Trey Lyles. So we've got Rudy Gobert, we've got Derek Favors. I think Derek Favors is either he's coming up for a contract soon. So is Trey Lyles going to make him expendable, or are Favors and Gobert the front court of the future for the Jazz?
Gosh. I really, really like Derek Favors. But I mean, theoretically, Trey Lyles could make him expendable. He certainly has the ability from what I've seen so far. And not only that, but he can help you space, which you don't have the same kind of options with Favors. Not the same kind of range. I mean, he can hit some jumpers, but he's not going to pull you out quite as far as Trey can. I would personally like to see them hold on to both, but of course it gets into, you know, he's due for some money. So, you know, if you feel like you can't hang on to him, then yeah, it's great to have Trey there because you can afford to let him go.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's right on. Ideally, you know, I mentioned it with Oladipo and OKC, like you re-sign him just to trade him later. Like you do not want to lose Derek Favors for nothing. And Gordon Hayward's also, he's a free agent after this year, same type of thing. I mean, I think they want Hayward around long-term, so that would not be a sign to trade, but you know, I think if you can, you try to extend Favors now and get him on a longer term deal under whatever the salary structure is now, because it sounds like there could be a new CBA very soon. So,
right.
You know, work under the terms that you know rather than whatever is to come, because you have no idea what the new system is going to be. But yeah, I mean, Trey Lyles looks really good. Like he was the number 12 pick last year. So it takes big men. It often takes big men a little bit longer to adjust to the NBA than it does guards. But his transition has not been very rocky. He seems pretty well adjusted so far. So it would not totally shock me to see him supplant Favors one day. And until then, again, like he's more depth off the bench. In case, I mean, Favors got banged up a lot last year, so Lyles can slide right in. Like they are probably the roster most able to handle major injuries because of the players behind their starters. Morton, I want to go to you for this one, because I don't know why. I feel like people are forgetting Dante Exum is a thing. Do you think he's going to be a key contributor for the Jazz off the bench this year?
No, I think he's going to have to like take the year to really get fully back. Like that it was an ACL tear. It was gone a whole year. Mm-hmm. His rookie season was kind of shaky. Mm-hmm. Even though he actually displayed a better three-point shot than I thought. So I'm kind of hoping he builds a little bit on that. But his rookie season was very underwhelming. Mm-hmm. And with the fact that he's been out for so long, I think he's going to take like 50 to 60 games to find like his space, if you want to call it that. And then afterwards, like going into next season, then I think the hype might be real.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, he shot very poorly as a rookie and then missed his whole sophomore season with the ACL tear. He's looked good in spurts during the preseason. I think he had 18 points the other night. So it seems like he's at least a little bit rounding back into form. He also had some... I think where he's going to make his biggest impact is defense. Because they don't need him to score 20 a night. Like, they've got...
Yeah.
They have Hayward, they have Hood, they have George Hill, they have Favors, they have Gobert, they have Trey Lyles, they have Joe Johnson. Like, they have plenty of other scorers. So if Exum, even if he doesn't put up huge box score numbers, as long as he's playing good defense, that's all they can and should ask for him this year. And then everything else he provides is a bonus.
Well, not playmaking. I expect him to playmake, though.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair.
Because he was pegged as a point guard, like a Penny Hardaway size point guard.
Mm-hmm.
And even if it doesn't materialize to that, then I do still expect him to utilize the sense of understanding of the floor and the schemes and whatnot. He's an intelligent player. He can make reads.
Yeah.
So I want him to dig into that bag this year already. Like, he kind of has to. And I feel that he and Rodney Hood has to be on the same page in the month that Hayward is out.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that could be like an interesting pairing.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, I'm admittedly doing this somewhat as a homer pick because we just did this franchise draft at today's Fast Break where we like all, it was 30 people, we all picked players who, if we were starting a franchise today, who would you build around? And Exum was my fifth round pick. I had Giannis, Miles Turner, Fournier, Robert Covington, and then Exum to round up my lineup. And I was like, how the hell did Dante Exum fall to, like, I think it was pick 131 in a who do you start your franchise with today? Like, he's, I don't know. I feel like he's just going totally under the radar. And I, you know, I think he was the number five pick 2 years ago.
Yep.
Like, he has the draft pedigree that suggests he's going to be a very good player. I mean, obviously not all draft picks pan out. So we can't just say he was the number five pick. He's going to be an all-star. But, I mean, he's a 6'6 point guard who's a good playmaker and a good defender. Like, I think maybe, you know, we've seen it before where an ACL tear lets guys work on their shot while they are away because that's all they can do for a while. So maybe he has refined his three-point shot a little bit, and maybe the game has slowed down for him a little bit because he had to spend a year on the bench watching from there. So just seems like, I mean, the dude's 21. He doesn't turn 22 till next July. Like, I still think he's a big part of the Jazz future. You know, George Hill's obviously a good short-term option for them. But I think just the upgrade that they're going to make in terms of point guards this year is huge, and that's fueling a lot of the optimism in general about the Jazz this year. So let's actually swing right over to our division predictions, because I feel like that's a good place to transition. And before we give our picks, Sarah, can you break it down in terms of watchability in this division?
Can we talk about Zach Lowe's league pass rankings for a second?
Yes.
Like, I told you guys, like, this is sneakily, in my opinion, the most exciting division in a league right now.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, that depends on how you feel about young teams, but all I see is a heck of a lot of fun. You guys know my big man bias, so, obviously I'm going to put the Jazz at the top, and then the Wolves and the Nuggets jockeying for 2 and 3. But that goes to personal opinion. If you love guard play and exciting stuff on that end, you're obviously going to want to watch OKC and Portland. But just watch these teams a lot. That would be my suggestion. I'm excited about all of them.
Yeah, this is going to be a fun division. I mean, angry Russ, angry Dame, Tibbs and Towns, Jokic, and then the Jazz. Like, you can't go wrong here, folks. All right, so I'm going to give my standings, and then, Morton, you tell me why I'm wrong here, because I actually struggled with this a lot. I think the Jazz are the clear number one. I think the Nuggets are the clear number five. And then I think 2, 3, and 4 could go any way. But I have it OKC 2, Portland 3, and Minnesota 4.
Yeah, I agree with you that 2, 3, and 4 can, like, interchange a little bit. I have it the other way around, though.
You have Minnesota 2, Portland 3.
I have Minnesota 2, but with the caveat that Portland could actually snatch it real quickly.
Okay.
Like, if things go... Like, you mentioned that Minnesota could have, like, a poor start to the year.
Mm-hmm.
I think that could be very well be the case. And if that does present to be the case, then Portland swings up and takes 2.
Okay.
And then Minnesota... And then Oklahoma City down at the 4th spot.
Mm. Okay. So I might be irrationally high on Oklahoma City, is what this confirms.
Well, no, not necessarily. The thing is, 2, 3, and 4, they're so equal. It's a crapshoot. It's really a crapshoot.
Yeah.
I mean, and also there are so many unknowns here. Like, just think about this: the whole Oklahoma City's entire roster organization, like, their whole infrastructure changed when Durant left that team. Now Minnesota got Tibbs in, not just as a coach, but as a team president, meaning the organizational structure also changed for them.
Mm-hmm.
Portland, transition year, in a way, they surprised the hell out of everyone. So now we're all asking, well, where do they go from here? So it's entirely fair that those three are smack labeled with a big-ass question mark.
Right. Yeah, that's fair. I mean, yeah, it sounds like neither one of us are super confident in our picks from 2, 3, and 4. So,
oh, no, not whatsoever. Yeah. And that applies to the rest of the divisions as well, for the most part.
Right, right. True. All right. So The MVP of the division, I feel like it comes down to three guys. Russell Westbrook, Karl-Anthony Towns, and Damian Lillard. Sarah, who do you have as your MVP here?
I feel like I should pick Damian again just to reinforce that he's not underrated. So, yeah.
You're going with Damian.
That's what I'm picking, yep.
Good, good. All right, Warren, how about you?
I can't not go with Westbrook on this one.
Yeah, I'm right with you. Check out Moritz Kalov on today's Fast Break in a couple days when it goes live. It sounds like it's going to be good, but, I mean, he's just going to be so angry. I have him in a fantasy basketball keeper league, and I've never been more excited to play fantasy this year than with Russ putting up 35, 10, and 8 every night. All right, so coach of the year in the division I think is actually pretty tough. I think there's an argument to be made for any one of these five coaches. Mort, I'm going to assume you're going with Tibbs here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. Sarah, how about you?
It is a tough call. I've gone back and forth. I think I'm going to go with Stotts, though.
Okay.
I think he's going to get the most out of that roster. Which is why I can't say that they're not going to make the playoffs. I think they're probably going to sneak in somehow because he's going to make it work as best he can.
Yeah, I mean, he did last year. Like, he earned some buzz as – I forget where he finished in the Coach of the Year voting, but he was actually up there, I think. Mm.
And deservingly so.
Yeah.
He was great.
Right. Like, we should always mention that Coach of the Year tends to go to a guy who's either just so far and away the best – if you have a 73-win season, it tends to go to you, even if you miss half the year. Or it's a guy who your team was projected to be garbage, which was Portland last year. They were supposed to be at the bottom of the league, and then you win 45 games. So with that in mind, I feel like Denver, if they surprise this year, Mike Malone could get some buzz. Billy Donovan in OKC, you know, if they survive this Durant apocalypse and somehow bounce back in 45 wins and Oladipo blend seamlessly, they've got a shot. But I'm going to go with Quinn Snyder. I mean, everyone expects them to be good, so he has to live up to high expectations. But I think they're going to. I think the Jazz are going to be a 50-win team, and I think he would slightly edge out Tibbs in my mind. So let's go with our crush.
Bite your tongue.
Sorry?
Bite your tongue. Bite your tongue.
Yeah, I know. I'm high on the long-term future of the Timberwolves and Tibbs. I just think they're
I love Quinn Snyder. I get it.
Yeah.
I totally get it. It's just I just have, like you mentioned, like the whole trip that Tibbs took around the states and different teams and whatnot. I think he's coming back with a vengeance.
Yeah.
And like you saw how Tibbs coached when he was pissed off.
Right.
Like he's got more power. Like he took a year off to grow smarter.
Yeah.
I have a feeling that Tibbs forgot more about basketball in the last 24 hours than I have ever known in my entire life.
I agree.
So I mean, I don't have the nuts, is what I'm saying, to suggest that Tibbs is not going to own everything this year. I don't have the guts to it. He's going to kick my ass.
Yeah, and I think I'm going to check real quick. I think when he took over the Bulls, they were like, what, 24, 25 wins? No, sorry, 41 wins the season before.
Yeah, that was after Vinny Del Negro.
Yeah, and then they jumped to 62 the next year. So a 21-win jump. Basically the same roster, right?
No, they actually build up a little bit. That was Derek's MVP year.
Oh,
they got
Boozer
and whatnot. But here's the thing.
Yeah.
They won 62 while having one guy who could create offense.
Mm.
One guy.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. This is utterly ridiculous.
He did not have a Karl-Anthony Towns on that roster. So, yeah. I mean, I'm probably going to look stupid for doubting Tibbs, but I just think that's a very young roster, and they're going to endure some hiccups that young rosters tend to do. So let's switch to our crushes in the division. Sarah, I'm going to start with you, and you are banned from picking Boris Diaw.
That's okay. I have a crush.
George Hill.
right? Yeah, that's a natural way to go there. I have a crush on this whole division, just team-wise. But I'm going to pick Trey Lyles, who we talked about earlier.
Nice.
Because I was watching highlights earlier today. It's like, gee, like, he has the Euro step in his game at 6'10".
Yeah.
Who else can we say that about? Like, Durant? Mm.
That sounds right.
About it. So, yeah. And he's just got a nice all-around game. He can handle. He can shoot the three. He's long. So, Trey Lyles all the way.
I like it. Morton, how about you?
Malik Beasley.
Ooh, that's a fun one. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I know he's going to get buried on the bench, but I think in those moments that we do get from him, he's going to put up some numbers. He's going to put up a show. I think he has this fluid knack of just getting that ball through the basket, and I loved seeing those guys develop and get minutes. Like, there's always that point in the season where a guy comes in, plays like 12, 13 minutes, and he scores like 16, 18 points, mm-hmm. like for one outing. I think he's like the type of guy who could do it a couple times, create a little bit of buzz, maybe like make people talk a little bit, say, oh, he should get more minutes. I'm digging his playing style.
Yeah.
I think he could be a pretty large piece. Not for Denver, but for Sacramento, because I have a hot take. I think Boogie's going to land there.
In Denver? Oh, yeah, that would be fun.
With Mike Malone.
Yeah. He needs to go back with Mike Malone. That was the one time he really got along with the coach. If the thing with Dave Yeager doesn't work out, I mean, Denver has the pieces. That's like...
Exactly.
That's a good point. They do have a lot of...
shooting guards. Yeah. They have a lot of big men. They have draft picks. They oozes of draft picks. They have Malik Beasley, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I have a feeling that if things don't work out well with Yeager, which, let me just say right off the bat, I do think he's like the best candidate to make it work with Boogie.
Right.
But if somehow it doesn't, I think Boogie will end up in Denver as opposed to Boston.
That's I don't even think that's a hot take. I think that is a completely reasonable take. And I actually, for Boogie's sake, I hope it happens. Because naturally, because they're the Kings, there's already some like front office infighting with Vivek giving an interview and then Jeff Petrie coming out and saying Vivek is an idiot. So
I was laughing when I read that. Yeah. It was just so Vivek.
Yeah, I know. It's like, oh, good. The season's here. The Kings are being the Kings again.
Yeah.
I mean, we already talked about my crush, Dante Exum. I just think he's going to be a big piece of the Jazz future. So I'm actually going to go with a different guy. I thought this guy was a little too mainstream to be a crush, but Steven Adams. I think he's going to be prove himself worthy of a max extension pretty quickly if he hasn't already.
And way too mainstream.
Yeah, exactly. That's my
definitely way too mainstream.
That my crush will be Exum, but I wanted to shout out Adams, because I think he's the second best player on OKC right now, and I think he's a huge piece of their future as well. So, with that said, that's going to wrap up all of our division previews at the NBA podcast. We're going to get one more podcast out before the season starts with a few preseason observations, along with our season predictions, both playoff teams and all the major award races. Until then, give us a follow at the NBA Pod on Twitter. Check us out on iTunes and at Today's Fast Break. Give us all three a follow on Twitter as well. Sarah and Morton, it's always good talking to you guys.
Likewise, Bri.
All right, take care.
Welcome to Total Wine & More. It's much more than a wine store. It's the eighth wonder of the world.
When people talk about Total Wine & More, they get a little carried away. We're just a big, friendly place run by people with a passion for wine and beer. See, we travel the world to find the best wines from the best regions, and we sell them at the lowest prices anywhere.
And friendly, helpful experts at every turn.
You know what? Maybe we are the eighth wonder of the world.
Shop in store or online at TotalWine.com.